This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The film version of the acclaimed Broadway musical West Side Story turns 50 tomorrow. The production set Romeo and Juliet against the backdrop of 1950s New York and told the story of Tony and Maria, two young people from feuding communities who fell very madly in love.
Tonight, tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you and the world went away. Tonight, tonight, there's only you tonight. What you are, what you do, what you say.
Today, all day, I had the feeling.
The musical was not always set on the West Side and was not always a smash hit. For many, the story of romance, racial prejudice, and heartbreaking tragedy holds up as well today as it did 5 decades ago. What do you think? Does the film still hold up? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, historian and classicist Victor Davis Hanson on the end of Sparta. But first, West Side Story. In a few minutes, we'll talk with two of the film's award-winning stars, George Chakiris and Rita Moreno. But we begin with Seattle Times theater critic Misha Burson, who joins us from member station KUOW. She's the author of Something's Coming, Something Good, West Side Story, and The American Imagination. Nice to have you with us today.
My pleasure.
And I understand if things had gone differently, this could have been East Side Story.
Yes. Originally, when Leonard Bernstein, the composer, and Arthur Lawrence, the writer, got together and started thinking about this, they originally thought the best thing to do would be to make it about Italian Catholic kids and Jewish kids in the Lower East Side. And they and Jerome Robbins, the director and choreographer, spent quite a lot of time working on this version, which would have been called East Side Story.
So it would have been a very different show completely.
Completely. And I think they made the right decision, obviously. But after they tried a bunch of scenes, they had outlines, they really went, you know, fairly far in that direction. They just realized that this was not, this just wasn't current enough. It wasn't fresh enough. And they dropped it. And they went on hiatus from this idea. And years passed before they came back to it and made the decision to reset it among Puerto Rican kids and Anglo kids on the Upper West Side.
And interesting, you mentioned a few of the luminaries who were involved in the production. A young Stephen Sondheim brought in to write lyrics.
That's right. Well, originally, Leonard Bernstein was going to write both the lyrics and also the music. Well, Leonard Bernstein, during this period, and I should say there's about 9 years there from the beginning of this idea mm-hmm. until the fruition, he was a little busy. He was a conductor for the New York Philharmonic. He was doing television shows. He was writing the music for Candide, a very ambitious musical. And he was kind of a superman, but at a certain point he had to say, wait a minute, I can't handle it all. And they looked for a lyricist. They considered a number of people. And Arthur Lawrence knew Sondheim. And even though Sondheim had never done a Broadway show and he was much younger than his colleagues, he got the job. And it was obviously a great fit.
And the resetting finally opens on Broadway. Of course, like every Broadway musical, it's got its funding problems and the stories of what went wrong during rehearsals and everything else. But it took the critics by storm when it opened in 1957.
Well, it was completely fresh. I mean, there really are so many innovations in West Side Story in terms of Broadway musical that you could go on and on about it. There had never been a romantic Broadway musical where the three main male characters wound up dead. This was really a musical tragedy. That was one thing. Another thing was that the music was very jarring. It was very modernist, quite different than the usual tunesome Broadway show. And the show was about bigotry. and about young people. This was really the first Broadway show that was about teenage angst.
We're talking with Misha Burson of the Seattle Times, where she's an award-winning theater critic. She's also the author of Something's Coming, Something Good, West Side Story, and The American Imagination. We want to hear from you. Does the film version opens, 50 years ago tomorrow, does it still hold up? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Martha. Martha with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hi, yes, I think it held up extremely well. I have never seen the movie. I saw it over the weekend. It was part of the Jacksonville Film Festival, and they were commemorating the 50th anniversary. Even though I was 10 or 11 when the movie came out and have read the score, or, you know, the screenplay a couple of times, knew all the songs, I had never seen the movie, and I was blown away.
Mm.
Even now, I was absolutely blown away. There's still so much prejudice, ethnic, racial, what have you, in the world. I don't think that this story will ever fade away, and I highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it.
And if there was one scene in the movie that particularly gripped you, what was it?
Oh, my. Well, of course, the ending. That was a tearjerker. Be sure and take some Kleenex, because it's tragic. It's a tragic love story. It's a tragic story of misunderstanding.
After 50 years, we can give away the ending.
Well, we all know the ending.
Well, the appeal, I should say that the appeal of the story is very much the appeal of the great play it's based on, Romeo and Juliet. In fact, the writer Arthur Lawrence really took a lot of plot points from Romeo and Juliet. But this in Romeo and Juliet, there were these warring houses. You never understood what the feud was between the Montagues and the Capulets. In West Side Story, it's very clear that it's these poor white gang members versus these young immigrant Puerto Rican, they were, mm-hmm. of course, United States citizens, but these newcomers to New York. So it gives it an extra modernity that really still, unfortunately, still rings true.
Well, Martha, thanks for the call, and good luck on your discovery over the weekend.
Thank you.
George Chakiris won an Oscar in the film for his role as Bernardo, the leader of the Sharks. And when Bernardo's sister Maria starts dating Tony, remember the Jets? A showdown ensues.
We challenge you to a rumble. All out, once and for all, except...
On what terms?
Whatever terms you're calling. You crossed the line once too often.
You started it.
Who jumped Baby John this afternoon?
Who jumped me the first day I moved here?
Who asked you to move here?
Who asked you?
Who were you?
Back where you came from.
Spix, Mick,
what?
That kind of language rarely used in productions at that time, another element of the show that pushed conventional boundaries. George Chakiris now joins us to talk more about the film and his role in it. He's at our studios at NPR West. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello there.
Hi there, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's hard to believe it's 50 years.
It is hard to believe. It feels like it was yesterday, actually.
And we should point out that I think in the London production, you were on the other team. You played Sharks and Jets.
Well, in London, I played the role of Riff, the leader of the Jets. That was my first experience of a West Side Story and working for Jerry Robbins as well. But it was an incredible, incredible time. And by the way, it took London by storm as well.
And what was it that you think appealed to people in London about it? There was so much in New York set on Broadway, sure, but London?
Well, you know, that was such an incredibly rich time in British theatrical experience. The Royal Court Theatre, Lindsay Anderson, all these, Peter O'Toole and Albert Finney were just about to burst on the scene. So it was just a very rich, rich time in London. And they had never seen anything like West Side, just as they hadn't in New York either. So they were... just as a theatrical experience, I'm sure much more than that, it was something just so exciting in that they kept coming back. Princess Margaret came to see the show many times as well. It was just an exciting, unique theatrical experience, to just put it mildly.
Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Ivan. Ivan calling us from Little Rock.
Oh, hello. Yes. I just wanted to say I know musical theater as well as anyone in this country. I had my father's old records from 20s, 30s, 40s. Then I was an actor. I was Tony years ago. Almost did it on Broadway in the revival in the 80s, not quite. I've seen every musical since then. I still consider it in the top three with Guys and Dolls and Carousel.
And what part, you said you were almost Tony on Broadway, and we're sorry if you didn't make it, what part of the show works most for you as somebody who's performed in it?
Oh, well, as a singer, it's perfection. I mean, there's not a bad note in it. It lies well, if you're of that voice. The duets with Maria are unlike anything I've ever done in operetta. I mean, it was so close to operetta. I did want to say one thing. I think you know that, you may not know, Sondheim was not proud of those lyrics. He was such a young man. I think he was embarrassed by the lyrics to Maria, for example. And his later shows were much better. But those guys were geniuses. And add in the fact that they were all gay. I love the fact that it's such a great love story. Arthur Lawrence, they were all homosexuals. And to have written such a wonderful heterosexual story, I think is an added extraordinary feature of the show. I still love it. I still listen to the old LP. It's no one's topped it. Sondheim hasn't topped it since. He lost. He didn't have a collaborator.
I think I Feel Pretty was the particular lyric in which he expressed some regrets. Misha,
I just want to say here that the men involved, at least two of them, were bisexual and had relationships with women. So just to be a little careful about that historically. But there were two songs that Sondheim, in his recent book, talked about being very proud of. And he was proud of being part of this show. This was an incredible education for him. It just absolutely vaulted him onto Broadway. And the two songs that he says he loves the lyrics for are Something's Coming, my personal favorite, and the Jet Song.
Well, more about that in a bit. Misha Burson is with us from KULW, our member station in Seattle. Also with us, George Shakiris. When we come back, his girlfriend in the film, Rita Moreno, will join us. She played Anita in the film. We'll reunite the two of them when we come back. And more of your calls. Does West Side Story still hold up? I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. The film version of West Side Story premiered in New York City on October 18th, 1961, 50 years ago tomorrow. Our question to you today, does the movie still hold up? 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Seattle Times critic Misha Burson and George Shakiris, who played Bernardo in the film. His girlfriend in the film, Anita, was played by Rita Moreno. The two of them share the screen in one of the film's most memorable songs.
I like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Okay.
Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Rita Moreno joins us now from her home in Berkeley Hills, California. Her new show, Life Without Makeup, is playing at the Berkeley Repertory Theater through the end of the month. And nice to have you with us today.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm such a fan of yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that.
I listen to you almost every day.
Well, thank you very much, Rita Moreno. That's an endorsement I'll treasure.
Definitely an endorsement.
After 50 years, what do you still think of the movie?
I think it's a treasure. You know, there are things that... There's one thing about it that's dated, and it's a lot of the dialogue. I talk about that in my play because there's some things that are kind of hilarious. Like, who in their right minds in the ghetto would say things like, hey, daddy-o, cut the frabba-jabba.
I'm not sure anybody said it then either.
Exactly. Exactly. I think some of that stuff was dated. The gang dialogue was dated before we even did the film. In any event, that really is neither here nor there because I do think it's held up rather well. And, you know, how can you question whether Romeo and Juliet holds up? I do understand that the dialogue there was infinitely more beautiful and lyrical. Nevertheless, I think the concept of doing a musical about that and putting it into the 20th century was just brilliant.
George Shakiris, as you know, is also with us. And I wonder...
No, hi, George.
Hi, Rita. How are you?
Okay.
I'm coming up to see you.
Oh, when?
Well, I don't know yet. Maybe next week, hopefully.
Okay, I just thought I'd get you on the air and force you to come.
Oh, you don't have to force me. I'm coming.
There's one sale you've made.
So what can we tell you?
Well, I wonder, what was it like playing with him on the movie set?
With George?
Yeah.
Oh, God, we had so much fun.
We did.
Laughed and laughed and laughed. And when I laugh really, really hard, I wet my knickers. And I was constantly changing my hose.
Yeah, I remember that.
And we had the best fun. There were a little mafia group. It was myself and George and a terrific dancer actress named Yvonne Osan. And we used to hang out together and just laugh.
I think
most dancers do that because they work so bloody hard that the only way to live through some of the physical torture was just to, you know, to employ your sense of humor.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always thought dancers, because of the hard work that they have to endure in their training and so on, they always have great senses of humor because it's the only way to get through it, as you say.
And yeah. Misha Bertzen, as we hear the songs, we're talking about the dialogue, a lot of this was dance.
Yeah, and I think the great innovation there was there had been musicals where people like Agnes DeMille and George Balanchine had done these kind of story ballets in the middle of the musical. But a lot of the story of this musical is told through dance.
Yeah.
And Robbins was just a genius at that. That long sequence at the beginning, which was really hell to film, I'm sure George Shakiris has many memories of that.
Yeah.
It was twice as long as it was on stage. And for me, if the film had just been that, it would have been great. So, but yeah, he used dance in a very narrative way, and all the
Absolutely.
Parts.
You know what's really interesting too, in line with that, is that he actually choreographed for character. The steps he would give to Anita, for instance, my character, would not be good on anybody else in the play or in the film. They were specifically, very specifically, Anita steps, as George Shakiris playing Bernardo had steps that were very specifically for his character, which I think is just extraordinary.
Well, and also this idea of narrative is absolutely true. In the usual musical, that you know, Hollywood movie musical that I love very much, very often, in fact, most of the time, the plot would come to a certain point, then they would do a musical number, and then the plot would pick up where they left off.
And
what Jerry does is true.
Musicals. But you know, George tells them there used to be a young chorus boy in a lot of those MGM films.
Oh, yes, I did all of that too, but again, the narrative
Gentlemen
thing
prefer blondes, right? I've spotted you in that one.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite
right.
credits is saying I was on the set with Marilyn Monroe. the narrative thing, I don't like to say dance number, every musical sequence, whether it was through movement or through song, advances the story. The story keeps moving along with everything, and so you're on this perpetual ride.
Let's get Stephen on the line. Stephen's calling us from Duluth.
Hello.
Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi. Number one, it's really a pleasure to talk to you. I'm a huge fan of the movie and the stage show, so thank you for your contributions. Second, I would say the thing that makes it modern for me, I'm a vocal performance major, a graduate vocal performance major in university right now, and I've performed in West Side Story. What makes it so modern for me is the rhythm. Actually, the mixed meter in some of the numbers, I'm specifically thinking... some of it is dance at the gym and then possibly the rooftop dance when they're going in those different time signatures. It's yeah. very, very difficult to do. And I recall my director at one point saying that you know, originally people had sort of struck out against it. They thought it was too hard to sing and to dance to. So that's definitely what makes it for me.
That was, yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember that after the film came out, for some, God knows what kind of reason, Bing Crosby, who had a special on TV every now and then, decided to, hard to believe, decided to sing America. And
oh,
this
no.
is the time meter he used. I like to be in America. Okay by me in America. And I
doesn't
went,
sound
no!
like a good marriage, does
what
it?
What are you doing to this song? Is that, what is, I can't remember, is that 6/8 time, George?
It's,
I'm sorry?
Isn't it in two times?
6/8 time?
I
believe it's in two signatures.
I believe it's in 12/8, but it alternates between compound and simple time. So it has
yeah.
two beats in compound time and then three smaller beats in simple.
And you think
this
that's complicated. What about the rumble? That was insane. The counts, the music.
Very
counts.
Difficult.
I want to throw off the audience because this is very complicated stuff, but that was really difficult.
Stephen, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
There were those complicated tunes, and then there were, well, ones that had a different function in the show. For example, this is any good gang in a musical. The Jets have their own theme.
When you're a Jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a Jet, let them do what they can. You've got brothers around, you're a family man.
And George Chakiris, that tune, and I guess it was Officer Krupke, too, those are different.
Well, the Jets song is the same. Krupke is different in Russ. I'm sorry, Russ, because that was just Russ Hamlin that
yes.
we heard. Actually, Tucker Smith that we heard. But it was Riff who sings that, of course, in the theater version, the Jets song.
Mm-hmm.
And also he sang Cool. He was not in Officer Krupke in the theater version.
Mm-hmm.
The film version is altered in a fantastic way by beautiful screenplay by Ernest Lehman, because the Officer Krupke comes before the rumble and not after. So I'm sorry, I may not be answering your question, but it's structured differently. And again, in the theater version, it was Riff who sang Cool. In the film version, mm-hmm. it is the character Ice, played by Tucker Smith, incredibly played by Tucker Smith. So I is that any kind of an answer?
Well, we'll move on.
I'm
in any
glad
case.
That
yeah, move on.
The role of Ice was not didn't even exist in the play.
Yeah.
They
That's
added
right.
it for the film.
That's right.
Sergeant Krupke was fascinating because they had to change a few words. I don't know what I can say on the air, but some of the things they changed, like there was a line about my grandma pushes tea, which of course was marijuana, and they had to change that.
Mm-hmm.
Which
for the film version,
I just want to say one thing about the, you know, kind of made up slang. One of the reasons for that, whether it was successful or not, is that they could not swear at all on stage then. I mean, when you think about it, 1957, forget about nudity. You couldn't even say, you know, damn, hell, all kinds of words that young people would say to each other. So Arthur Lawrence had to kind of invent some.
My personal favorite is and there's no excuse for this one. My personal favorite is when the Jets are desperately looking for Tony because he's killed Bernardo. And in the midst of this melee, when they're all desperately trying to find Tony, you take the river, I'll take the park. And one of the tough Jet girls says, I and Graziella will take to the streets. Explain that to me. My favorite line.
Here's an email from Susan in Tulsa. I was in love with George when that movie came out, and my favorite, absolute favorite part of the movie was the opening dance sequence. I saw it so many times I could practically dance it myself. This from Bill in Tallahassee. Thanks to Rita Moreno for the kindness she showed to three Marine officers in 1968 in Puerto Rico. It is a memory I will have forever.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you.
And I think this was from, I'm not sure who wrote this, but I have never met a Puerto Rican who liked West Side Story, with the exception of Rita Moreno. What about that, Rita? Have you ever heard that before?
No. That's really interesting because, as I understand it, every Latino in the world was thrilled to pieces when I won that Oscar. Maybe I'm not answering the question directly. I've never, ever heard that from... There was one Puerto Rican person I know who was very upset about the film, and that was the mayor at the time of Puerto Rico, Doña Felisa Rincón, and she just thought it was offensive and all that kind of stuff. Other than that, no, I never heard that before.
Offensive in the darkened skins and the broad accents.
I'm sorry?
Offensive because she took offense at the broad Puerto Rican accents and the darkened skin.
You know, very likely. I wasn't thrilled about that myself. Again, that's something I cover in my show because there were several things that bothered me as a Hispanic. One was that we all had to be the same extremely dark color. And I remember asking the makeup man one time why the makeup couldn't match our different skin tones. And he really immediately assumed that one, I did not want to be Latina, and two, that I was racist. And not every Puerto Rican in the world in New York has a Hispanic accent. And I wasn't thrilled about that. But that was Jerry's choice. He wanted a big contrast between the Jets and the Sharks, and he actually had some of the boys in the Jets bleach their hair for the contrast, and they had exceedingly pale makeup.
Rita Moreno and George Chakiris both won Oscars for their parts in West Side Story, which opened 50 years ago tomorrow. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. George, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's all right.
That's okay.
I was going to say there's a chapter in my book about bigotry in West Side Story, and it's kind of ironic that since the musical, some Latino academics have taken some exception with it, mainly because they felt that it showed just, you know, one very tiny aspect of Puerto Rican life. And this is sometimes what happens when there's a first. This was the first time there were any Puerto Rican characters in a Broadway musical.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's really important. It was a first. And very likely that's why most Hispanics, including Puerto Ricans, did not complain. They were just so thrilled to be depicted in a film that, in its own way, defended them. That's why I really honestly never heard what this person said, and you know I'm sure he wasn't telling a tale, but I never heard
anything like that. I remember Rita. I don't know if I was with you or not. I think I was not. But one of those things where UA sent us to another country. I went to Spain, which of course is a Spanish-speaking country, and they for years, by the way, everybody thought I was Puerto Rican. I mean, they just assumed I was Puerto Rican. But in Spain, it had been playing for a few years in the same theater, just as it had done in Paris on the Champs-Élysées for 5 years. But they absolutely loved it. No one was offended, and I never heard that ever.
I know that's the first time for me, and again, I don't doubt what this person said. He may have run into a passel of Puerto Ricans who were not happy about it.
Let's see, we get one last caller in. This is Marcy. Marcy with us from Oakland.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call, and Rita and George, thank you so much for that movie. I was 16 years old the first time I saw it. By now, I must have seen it about 40 times. When I first called, the woman who screened me said I should say what doesn't hold up, and the only thing I've felt for years now that didn't hold up as well was some of the love scenes, the getting married in the shop, and the... even the Tonight scene, but the rest of the movie, oh, my favorite is America. My favorite is the two of you dancing. Ah,
thank you.
I have to say, though, that I love the lyrical qualities of the wedding in the shop.
Well, I like the song. I do love the song. And I play the album all the time. I'm going to watch this tomorrow. I'm declaring tomorrow a national holiday. it's just an amazing movie.
Marcy, thanks very much. We will celebrate with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I'm
Thank
delighted.
You very much.
Thanks again for your interest. Bye-bye.
Yes, absolutely.
Rita Moreno, who joined us from Berkeley, California, where she's currently appearing in a one-woman show, Life Without Makeup, which is playing at the Berkeley Repertory Theater. And George Chakiris joined us from NPR West. Thanks you very much, George.
Yeah, thank you.
Our also thanks to Misha Burson, award-winning theater critic for the Seattle Times. Her new book is Something's Coming, Something Good, West Side Story and the American Imagination. She was with us from KUOW, our member station in Seattle. Up next, historian Victor Davis Hanson takes a plunge into fiction. He will join us next to talk about the end of Sparta. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.